And then the cutback
by myself.
Sorry, Chair, before you go on.
Yeah.
This submission with regard to the correction of the Auditor General remuneration package.
Yes.
I agree with you that we need to establish a process.
Yeah.
I think that's the critical thing. But I would just like to say that this document is inadequate for the purposes of real engagement with the issues, because it does presuppose a number of other things that we would need to have for that subcommittee to work meaningfully.
All right.
And if I could just note that, for example, we would need the supporting documents.
Yeah. I think let's pause there, because it's an agenda item.
Yeah.
Let's get to it.
Okay.
I'm just introducing the agenda.
Yeah.
So that we know the context of what's on the agenda item before we can adopt the agenda itself. Now, the last item is basically a brief report from myself on those activities that I embarked upon on behalf of SCOWAC in my capacity as chairperson. The REMCO meeting is an example of that. There has been a number of other meetings, and I wanted to take the committee on board insofar as that is concerned. All right. Who am I welcoming as well to the meeting right at the end of?
I'm from PMG.
PMG. Welcome, ma'am. All right, colleagues, that is the proposed agenda. I don't know if anybody wants to suggest any additions, subtractions to the agenda. Is it in order? Can I propose that we rather deal with item 2 first, now that Mr. George has already delved into it? But that's
deal.
It's Dr. George and Mr. Steele. Pardon me, pardon me. And because the last item is more elaborate, the first item is more elaborate, so maybe if we could deal first with the second item and second with the last item, because that would be fairly quick. And on that note, can I, if we agreed to the agenda as suggested, could I then proceed and request the Secretary to just read through the letter that we've received from the Auditor General, from the REMCO, relating to the AG's salary? Yeah. Okay, the letter is dated March 16, 2010, from the correction on the of the Auditor General remuneration package. Number
we
one.
Don't have, we didn't record the date of receipt of the letter.
It is indicated March.
No, no, I mean that's the letter base date.
That's
the
date. Received on the 4th of May.
The 4th of May. Can that be recorded?
Okay.
All right.
Okay. And number one, the purpose of this submission is to obtain the SCOWAC chairperson's approval to 1.1, implement the correction to the Auditor General's remuneration package to reflect salary, allowances, and other benefits applicable to the position, and implement a process and mechanism of dealing with Auditor General salary matters in the future. Number two, background. The appointment of the Auditor General is governed by the Public Audit Act, Section 7, Subsection 1 to Section 7, Subsection 3. Mr. Terence Nombembe was appointed as the Auditor General on a 7-year term of office, commencing the 1st of December 2006 to November 2013. During this appointment, he was offered a salary of $1,708,600, which was to be reviewed on an annual basis. This salary package was determined on the basis of it being substantially the same as that of the Chief Justice. The salary package did not take into consideration the allowances and other benefits applicable to the position of Chief Justice. The Standing Committee on the Auditor General, who was responsible for his appointment at the time, made a commitment to have this situation reviewed as to ensure that allowances and benefits are considered when making his total remuneration package. This commitment is reflected in the Remuneration and Condition of Employment Contract, Section 4.1, Annexa A, which was approved by the previous South African President, Mr. Thabo Mbeki. In addition to the commitment to have Mr. Nombembe's salary adjusted, the select committee committed to a process to investigate the desirability of placing the determination of the Auditor General's remuneration under a relevant and an appropriate structure. This was meant to ensure that the remuneration matters of the Auditor General are managed and handled by an appropriate structure, which will ensure that the processes of determining and reviewing salary matters for the Auditor General are dealt with objectively and transparently. In determining the remuneration and condition of employment for the Auditor General, it was highlighted that this would be an interim measure and mechanism need to be put in place to finalize this issue. This was also aimed at ensuring that future appointments of Auditor General are dealt with as objective as and as professional as possible. These processes are also aimed at ensuring that the Auditor General South Africa, AXA, will be in a better position to attract and retain the scarce and critical skills that are required for appointment at this level. Number three, proposed solution. In the light of the above, the Auditor General salary remuneration package needs to be corrected and adjusted to be in line with salary allowances benefits of that of the Chief Justice. In order to effect this correction, the Auditor General requested an independent study, which is Annex B, to determine whether Mr. Nombembe's package is substantially the same as that of the Chief Justice. This implies that the salary allowances and benefits of the Chief Justice has to be costed and compared with that of Mr. Nombembe's remuneration package. To allow objectivity and transparency, a team of actuaries who specializes in remuneration and pension benefits from Alexander Forbes were requested to undertake the exercise. In addition to this exercise, the chairperson of AXA Remuneration Committee conducted a salary and remuneration benchmark study with some Chapter 9 institutions as well as institutions where the skills and competences required are the same as what is needed for a person to be appointed in the position of the Auditor General. The institutions consulted include the South African Reserve Bank, the South African Revenue Services, and the Development Bank of Southern Africa. The Development Bank of South Africa, Annexure C. These were the most appropriate institutions for benchmarking purposes. The skills and competencies required for these institutions are accounting, auditing, financial management. These skills and competencies are the same as those required for appointment in the position of the Auditor General. It must be noted these skills are scarce and make it extremely difficult for organizations, including the Auditor General, to attract and retain talent. The proposal presented is as follows. A correction, now that's bullet point number one, a correction to the Auditor General's remuneration package, inclusive of salary and allowances and benefits, to be implemented as follows. Increase the Auditor General's annual salary package from 2,221,400,000 to 3,492,000, effective November 2009. Implementation of termination benefit as approved by Alexander Forbes benchmarking exercise. The salary correction to take note of the original salary offer as well as the salary adjustment that were implemented during the past 3 years. The back pay amounts to be paid out are as reflected in the Alexander Forbes benchmarking exercise document. which is an exact being, establish a remuneration structure consisting of all the other general remuneration committee members to deal with future remuneration matters for the auditor general. The terms of reference for this structure to include the determination of the auditor general's salary at date of appointment, annual salary reviews, adjustment, as well as other remuneration allowances and benefits that may be applicable from time to time to the position of the of auditor general. The committee will serve in an advisor capacity and will give the necessary input for the standing committee on the auditor general to consider and grant final approval. This approval is in line with the practice found in the three institutions that were consulted, and it also includes best practices in dealing with remuneration matters of heads of organization. Point number four, the auditor general of South Africa confirms that the funds are available to effect the requested changes and amounts reflected in the Alexander Forbes benchmark exercise proposal. Number five, it is recommended that the standing committee on the auditor general chairperson approves the 5.1 implementation, the correction to the auditor general's remuneration package to reflect salary allowances and other benefits applicable to the position. And point number 5.2, implementation of a process and benchmarking of and mechanism of dealing with auditor general's salary matters in the future. These measures and recommendations are to be implemented as soon as necessary. Approvals have been granted. It's circled, recommended, and then chairperson of the Auditor General of South Africa Remuneration Committee, that is Dr. M. Bushin, is not dated.
The date of the letter.
Thank you, colleagues. That is the correspondence that's addressed to us. I know that the letter addressed itself to myself, but you'll notice further on in the letter itself that it's clearly indicated that the decision lies with the committee and not just with the chairperson of the committee. So that clarifies that. I made an earlier proposal which I would want to formally table, and that is that we consider setting up a smaller task team to consider this letter, including interacting on behalf of SCOWAC with REMCO. And soliciting any additional information that the task team may require to properly consider the matter and to make a recommendation to the committee. Do we need a quorum to make a decision to set up such a task team? I would prefer it to be a multi-party task team. My understanding is that we are currently constituted as the ANC, DA, COPE, and IFP. Is there any political party that I haven't mentioned that's represented in this committee? Right, so we could just agree amongst ourselves to the composition of that committee, unless anybody feels that such a decision would also require a... my understanding is that they would not be making a decision, they would be making a recommendation back to this committee, and it's only this committee that for purposes of law makes a decision. So I'm not sure for that purpose whether it would be absolutely critical that we will hold a quorum to agree on setting up such a task team. Can I entertain that and any other matter relating to this issue? Let me start with Mr. Steele, and then I'll come to Dr. Lavender, Professor Lavender.
Thank you, Chair. I think that your proposal is technically correct, that we can recommend the establishment of a multi-party task team at this meeting, even though we're not necessarily core it. That body would have to report back to the full committee to get a mandate anyway. I think that's perfectly acceptable. I would just please, as I say, wish it to be noted that the annexures referred to in the document, annexures A and B, must be made available to that task team and probably to the members of SCOAB generally, as they are going to be critical to informing any recommendation from that task team. So annexures A and B, please, must be made available.
All right, Prof?
Thanks. Basically, my colleague from the DA has actually said what I wanted to say. But having said that, Chair, I think we need also to give this task team, if we haven't thought of it, time frames. When must they come back to us? And as a last small point, since we're dealing here with a correction of a very serious matter, I noticed 5.1, there is a small correction there. You should read implementation of. Now correcting something, we've got to correct our task. Let's all check that.
Any further input on the issue? All right. I shall take it then that that is the way forward on this one, which leaves us with an agreement as to who should serve on the task. I suppose from the DA between yourself and Ms. and Dr. George, Mr. Steele, are you able to give us an indication who you would as the party like to make available?
I couldn't share without consulting Dr. George. Given his commitment to the Finance and Appropriations Committee as well, he might very well wish to recommend me, but that's something I would have to check with him.
Can I then, would it be appropriate perhaps that we invite the various political parties, having had these study groups, etc., to bring forth recommend names, one per party, to serve on this task team. And I think from the ANC side, it would be adequate to have myself as chair and just an additional member. I don't think we need to worry about representativity issues because this task team will not be making decisions. It would just be looking at things technically and then advising the committee accordingly. So I think that maybe it is appropriate that all parties go back and consider the matter of nomination of candidates. And I don't think we need to reconvene as this committee to consider those nominations. I think that maybe the approach should be that once I have received all the nominations, then I'll proceed and constitute such a task team, and that the task team can go ahead with its work. And the next time it comes to meet with us would be when it comes to report. Would that be in order?
Okay, Chair.
Yeah. Honourable Zeller, you wanted to add anything? Sure.
Thank you, Chair, and my apologies for being late. I think I agree with you, Honourable Chairperson, except to say that maybe in regard to time frames, we need to finalize it today, even if the committee will be established later, but today we must agree that about when should have this committee done its work, and even including the submission of names from all parties, including the ANC, to your office, you must say by when you will have received those names. If you leave it as blank as that do submit, then it will create a problem. So in terms of submission of names to your office, I recommend that by next Tuesday, the latest 12 o'clock, all names should have been submitted to you so that you can treat this matter as a matter of agency as it deserves. But as for the template for the committee, because I was not here for the introduction of the document, I don't know the terms of that, so I don't want to commit myself, but really my first time is also for the committee. Thank you.
The challenge, of course, is that if this committee has to depend on the availability of outsiders to finalize its work, in the sense that it may have to schedule a meeting with REMCO to receive a presentation from REMCO, as well as obtain in advance relevant documentation that it may deem necessary. That might affect our ability to determine the time frame, because obviously we'll be dealing with other people's availability who we have no control over. I'm just looking realistically. This is the last month of Parliament before the 2010 World Cup. Today is the 14th. The end of next week is the 21st. And the end of the following week is the 28th. And that effectively constitutes the end of the month and the end of Parliament until August next year. I mean, August later this year when Parliament resumes. So, and out of that, I also want to also indicate that the last week of the month, which is the 24th to the 28th, the 24th to the 28th, I am at the Magistrate Commission in Pretoria the whole of that week, dealing with appointments of new magistrates. So effectively, for my side, we're talking between now, today, the 14th, and the 21st, which gives us effectively only 1 week. Now, during that week, at best, what we could do is coordinate the establishment of the staff team, as has just been discussed, possibly also issue a letter in advance to REMCO, even before that task team meets, requesting whatever documentation that is in their possession that would assist that task team in preparation for the interaction with REMCO. So I think that's the best that can be achieved, as well as setting up, identifying a possible date for the first meeting of the task team where they would be meeting with REMCO and making a request to Parliament for approval of the taking place of that meeting so that the resources necessary wherever that meeting is going to take place are made available. I would imagine that if next week is the only week available, it means that if this committee is to do any work after Parliament has gone on recess, it would be during recess, and therefore it would have financial implications. So we would need to make a motivation and obviously then request approval from who is this? From Mr. Mabella's office. Maybe the task team might squeeze in a day, next week, having been constituted, to meet just to agree on process, so that during the course of the recess, if certain things need to be done, they can then be done, including scheduling of its proper meeting, be it on its own or with REMO. So that's more or less the kind of plan that is emerging from my own thinking. Mr. Steele?
Chair, I was actually going to propose something which I gather is not even going to be possible. I was assuming that we would all be at the APAC conference. It's the 25th and 26th, but I'll just get, of this month.
From the 23rd?
Well, the officials will be there on the 24th, Members only arrive on the 25th, according to my program. But you've already indicated that you're going to be at the Magistrates
Commission.
So you won't be at APAC, so we couldn't actually have a side meeting during APAC, so that would be a problem. But I think we're going to have to...
The only day that I would be here would be on the 26th, when when we will be voting on schedules, on the budget, because that is a voting process. I have already made arrangements. To return just for that day, but other than that whole weekend.
But I think, Chair, we're going to have to accept that in principle, given the urgency of this matter, we are going to have to schedule a recess meeting then.
Yeah.
I think that's going to be inevitable.
Sure. Right, probably that meeting might even happen outside of Cape Town, and depending on what's most practical, given the fact that Remco is predominantly going to be located in Gauteng. So colleagues may have to fly to Gauteng to hold such a meeting, or whatever the detail of that is going to be. But then let's agree in terms of developing the framework to say, in the light of all of that, it means, one, that Remco at best would have to do its work during the recess period that's coming, starting from June, ending sometime in August, which happened to be a period also that would be characterized by a hype of activity around the World Cup. So it might be tricky in terms of availability of colleagues as well, who would be serving on that task.
Well,
the idea is that you can enjoy it either in your lounge or at some of the public venues where there will be big screens and partying and things. Whatever other activities. But clearly some sacrifices are going to have to be made somewhere. And so that the work is done. Like I indicated, the AG has not had a raise since November last year. That's one thing. But the other more important issue is that what this letter in essence is saying is that the manner in which the AG's salary was calculated did not take account of certain things. One, the environment and the benchmarking in terms of the environment in which he operates. I've heard informal, anecdotal comments from certain people in important offices saying that we have a serious asset in Mr. Nombembe that we would want to preserve, because it's a very competitive environment. The level of skills that we're talking about there are the kind of skills that out in the market would attract serious money. So we can keep on relying purely on the grace of the good Lord to act in our favor all the time and preserve the skills that we have in the spirit of public service. So we need to be sensitive. But the other issue that really is being put forward is that the calculation of the salary thus far was based purely on looking at the salary aspect without looking at the total package in assets. So that's going to be the bulk of the task of that task team, is to review the matter in its totality and objectively assess whether the current arrangements are fully in compliance with the provisions, the letter and the spirit of the Act, which is saying substantially similar or equal to that of the Chief Justice. And the argument is that if you take into account the other benefits that are applicable to that office, then you don't, then there is no comparison. That's what they argue.
Apart from the Chief Justice Chair, did they perhaps have a look at the salaries of Auditors General globally?
Well, it's not obvious from the correspondence, I think, but I suppose those are some of the questions that the task team may need to pose in engaging with the issue. But I'm happy that they at least looked at locally institutions, as in public institutions, within the same realm. You know, they didn't go out to look at what does the CEO of Anglo-American Ends, but they went and looked at what does the head of the Financial Services Board or the Reserve Bank or whatever else, which I think is a much more fairer kind of comparison. All right, let's leave all of that to the good capabilities of the task team that will be set up.
And those nominations will be due by Tuesday 12 o'clock.
Tuesday by 12 o'clock. Let people liaise telephonically and let me receive feedback on that. Maybe we might be able to squeeze in some time for them to meet for a few minutes during the course of next week.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Fine. Now, can I also then just dispose of the third item before we go into the main item?
I need to be gone in 10 minutes, I'm afraid. I need to get to the scope of hearing as well, and I think Professor Dabadaba also.
We'll find a way of how to deal with that when we get to it. I will not take long on my report. I should think there's a document that's circulated, Shirley. Has it been circulated this time? Yeah, there's just a brief summary of an exercise that happens annually in the Aegis office under the watchful eye of IRBA, the independent regulatory body for auditors. Bearing in mind that the Aegis office is also externally audited, and IRBA is also an external audit authority outside of the Auditor General that oversees auditing standards, even in relation to the Aegis office itself. So it's a regulatory body in the audit environment. So I was invited to observe in my capacity as chair. So this is just a two pager just to give an indication of what that was all about. I suppose members can just take note of it, but the significance of it is that the watchdog gets to be watched as well. So this is checks and balances to see to it that systems within the Aegis office are credible, and that if there are fault lines, they are identified, early warning systems are functional, and each line function then gets to report. I don't know if anybody would want to ask any questions on that, but that's essentially for information. It's not necessarily one of the formal statutory duties, but it's prescribed in legislation. All right. Does anybody want us to read through it, or you've taken note of it? Yeah, Professor?
Yeah, I think it's fairly clear and obvious.
All right.
I have to read it, in my view.
Okay. All right, so that's that. The second one that I wanted to report on is a meeting that I attended, I think was it the 19th to the 20th, but it was for that week, from a Monday to Thursday. I can't remember what those days are of that week. I on the 20th specifically was invited to address a meeting of the senior managers of the Aegis office, which happens every 2 years, where they all come together under one roof to reflect on work and network and look at progress, award performance, and all those issues. So I arrived the night before to observe the award ceremony, and the following day I was asked to open the conference, the workshop. And in my opening, I sought to seek to reinforce the relationship between Parliament and the Auditor General, and assure the Auditor General as an institution of Parliament's commitment under the Constitution to its independence, and supporting it, and ensuring its effectiveness, independence, and so on. And that was well received. I left the workshop on a note of high-spirited note, if you like, on both sides, assured of the commitment in the office, in the institution on the one hand, and they are taking comfort in the fact that they are independent. Is intact from our side as politicians. So it was a way of conveying that assurance, not just on behalf of SCOEC, but on behalf of Parliament as a whole, which I thought was quite in place. I haven't seen anything in this institution that would suggest any attempt to seek to undermine the autonomy of that office. Right, and then finally, I was was invited to a workshop convened by the Chair of Chairs jointly, I think, with the Auditor General a week before last, was it the 29th or 28th of April, to discuss the issues arising out of the latest audit outcomes and the roadshows that the AG has undergone to various municipalities, provinces, meetings that he's had with executives at all three spheres, and to give feedback on what came out of that, and to also identify challenges in our audit system, where the difficulties are in terms of making progress towards achieving clean audits. It was all part of this campaign towards clean audits. My understanding is that we agreed on, at the end of the exercise, on a summary of observations and recommendations, which I would imagine Honorable Bapela in due course would release, and that SCOWAC would be favored with such a report as well. I've been trying to follow up in the last few days, but I think he's out of the country now. But the meeting was attended by chairs of chairs from national and provinces, as well as chairs of SCOPAS from national and provinces, and of course the AG's office. But like I said, once that report becomes available, we should be able to share the findings and recommendations. Some good recommendations came and observations came out of that, which I think we would take an interest in as going. That is that, and I think that concludes that item from my side, which then takes us to the main task, and that is the strat plan. Now, there's a draft. I'll just report quickly on the process leading up to today. Following our workshop, the facilitator who is employed by the committee section of Parliament, I understand, took it upon himself to collate all that came out of the workshop and make it available for us to consider. Now, little did I know that the very following day, following the workshop, he was going on leave, and that he would be on leave for the entirety of that ensuing, what do you call it, recess. We only received his first draft. When was that? Do you recall the date?
It's a week before last.
Yeah, it's just about 2 weeks ago that we finally received it. I was under the assumption, obviously wrongly so, that the document would have been available during the course of the recess, and that as the management committee would have met even before Parliament resumed, so as to finalize the text before we can table it here. But that meeting only became possible this week. Last week something went wrong with our meeting and we couldn't proceed. But and on numerous occasions our effort to secure the attendance of the facilitator were not successful. And that include today. I don't know if he was invited to today's meeting, because he is, you are you aware of the facilitator being invited?
I'm not aware.
You're not aware. Well, I kept on repeating to the committee secretary, and that's been the other challenge, to say whenever we have a management committee meeting or this meeting where the facilitator's document is at issue, he should automatically invite the facilitator to that meeting. There's been a number where he did not formally invite him, but where he invited him, like Tuesday, the facilitator didn't pitch, even though he undertook to come. During the recess, he undertook to meet with the officials, with his colleagues. He never honored that. And the date of submitting was delayed by another week or two, as is indicated. It's only 2 weeks ago that we got the document. Now, all of that has had an impact on our ability to finalize this document. And of course, now we are in a dilemma, because effectively we have next week, and after next week we have August. So if we are not able to finalize this document, which I accept you only received, when was it, yesterday? And it's fairly technical, so you might want some time to interact with it, especially given the fact that we don't even correct as a committee. now I think that I need your guidance in terms of going forward with this process, because clearly we cannot leave it to August to finalize. And if we don't leave it to August, it means next week we must adopt it. Otherwise, we are basically going to have a year and a half without a strategic plan and wallowing around like willows in the wind, doing things without a point of reference which should guide us in terms of what we need to do. So that is in short the matter before us. I don't know if there are any suggestions, comments as to way forward around this. Yes, Honorable Zeni.
I think I agree with you that we must approve the project plan before August. And that I'll further propose that maybe if we have elections, because I think next week there's no sitting. There will be no sitting. Maybe if we can try to find a date next week. But the other challenge is your office, your administrative backup. I'm saying it here in front of them, is very poor. Because we know that this committee, not that it's not taken seriously anyway, but all members in this committee belong to other committees. That our day is only Friday. And also a Friday personality to all members, everybody wants to go home. Like this Friday is month end. I was asking myself, we knew that we had this thing, but you can't blame those who are not here. It's month end. We are staying away far from our homes. When it's month end, you have to pay your assistant at due, somebody is assisting you at home. There are so many things to do so that by Monday you do your constituents, by Tuesday you are here. That's something that you need to do. Now, I'll make a concrete suggestion that says, let's meet next week, but you must have somebody in your office, Honorable Chair, that will make sure that today he or she sits in a phone to check all members of this committee to inform them firstly that today's meeting did not correct because of their unavailability, number one. To check with their comrades according to their work commitment for next week. Individual, don't even say that this meeting was, maybe it's because before I came here I was an administrator for 17 years. And maybe that is why I want to assist in this part. But you call all of us that this meeting did not correct, this document that was supposed to be dealt with didn't. So the people who were there, we agreed that it must be next week. But we are not confirming a date yet. We are just checking availability of individual members of the committee. After that, you sit down, you check, you are phoning, you check, Honorable Masuta said this day, Honorable So-so said this day, this one said this day, this one said this day. Now, you check the most popular day that almost half or a quarter of members will be available on that day. Now you start to liaise with your whip and your chairperson. That I've checked all the members, most of the members, when I checked my there, then the rest will be for the chairperson and the committee of the to convince other members to be available on that other particular day. Then the chairperson, the whip, must also talk to other whips of other committees.
Trying to catch the prof before he runs. And
okay.
And still, I think he's...
Oh, yeah.
They're going to leave. No, your point has been made. That's how we've tried to work, more or less. It works partially because sometimes members commit and then they don't pitch. But there are other challenges as well. I don't know if the secretary will find members on their phones today, for example, so that by Monday we know who's available, so that we can issue notices early in the week, next week. So, yeah, sure. So those are the challenges, really. We'll do the best we can to identify a date that suits everybody for next week, and then we will then deal specifically with the issue of the sad plan. So on that note, can I thank everybody for the effort to come to the meeting, and thank you very much for your continued support generally. Secretary, you want to say something before we close?
Yes. There's a form that has been distributed on the APEC conference. I was requested if members could just put their names and sign, and then I could have them, just to confirm their activity.
There's an APEC meeting during the week of the 24th. Colleagues, I will not be there, but it would be good if you could represent SCOWEC there. Right?
I'll be there.
All right. Make sure that you interact with the others also who are not here today. All right, yes. Yeah. Seven.
Okay. So we're not going to stay because I went through this form and I know that some of that is speaking.
I'm sure the committee section would deal with the cost. Yeah. Can you just make sure that all members get to be informed about the whole thing, about the fact that the cost, so that we clarify this? Phone them individually and find out their availability. All right, on that note, the meeting is adjourned, and have a safe journey back home.
See you next week. Thursday would be a good day for the DA because we don't have a caucus meeting next Thursday.
I'll have to first check. I'll try and target Wednesday afternoon. Is there a sitting Wednesday afternoon?
No.
Yeah, we'll try and see if Wednesday can work. If it doesn't, then we'll see. All right. Thank you very much. Meeting is adjourned.
But I'm not going to do anything with it. I'm just going to give them a copy of it.
Oh, no.
Because I also in my report said it's not adopted. It's a draft. And the agenda and the letter that they read.
By members of the committee, yes.
But also in the report that it's a draft, but it's fine then. It's fine, it's not that important. Just for the record.
Excuse me.
That's fine.
We only discussed progress.